Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 111, the show about Linux. We try to cover a variety of Linux news, distro reviews, Linux coming on new hardware, and just anything encompassing Linux whatsoever. Anything that interests us, we try to bring out to you and see what you think. I'm Cody Cooper, I'm the co-host, but of course, a large part of this show and my overall knowledge on Linux, past, present, and future, is this man, my co-host, Door-to-Door Geek, Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Doing pretty good. Busy week. Even though I had off today because it's election day here in the States, I was still uncommonly frigging busy. I mean, unbelievably busy. And then had to go out for family date night with the kids' daycare. And that took much longer than I expected it to.
Well, that stuff happens. Yeah. I live in a small town in Oregon, still a lot of hustle and bustle. I had to go buy my wife a new phone for an endeavor she's going on, and traffic all day was just crazy, and I couldn't believe it. But yeah, man, the hustle and bustle, when this stuff comes around, you know, everybody feels it.
Yep.
All right. So, I consider myself a man of my word. I'm sure you are too. So we should start off where we say we would start off from last week, and that is answering Ryan Ridenour's email, which honestly deserves a lot more time than we could have given it last week. And what he wrote in about was, hey guys, since Wine allows you to run some Windows EXEs on Linux, is it possible to get a Windows virus through Wine or play on Linux? What do we have to say about that, Door?
Yes. Next.
Is that all?
Oh, no. Well, I wanted to tie this in with the basic, because I didn't have a basic. There is no direct, complete answer with this. I will say there is multitudes of answers. Okay, running applications in Wine. Can you get infections? Yes, absolutely. And to me, that's a testament of how accurate, how well, how complete Wine is at doing its job. That's the quick answer, yes. The long answer is yes, but here's the dirty truth of it. Most infections that you can get via Wine will not complete their cycle of infection because they can't.
Right.
There's a lot of things missing in Wine, like network stack, lots of services, the System32 directory completely different. There's no IE. There's a lot of things just not there. So most infections will start and then stop, not being able to complete. Even if they are able to complete, they're not going to escape your .wine directory, which is a hidden directory in your home folder, okay? Because that's the end of the Windows file structure, you know? And it's actually not. In your .wine folder, you're actually going to have two folders. One is called Drives, I believe Drive C, and I can't remember what the other one's called. But those two folders will contain the infection, and it will not go any further. What you can do, if you do think you are infected, simply delete those two folders. Get rid of them, and then your infection is essentially gone. It cannot outlive that. They're not going to infect your master boot record. They're not going to infect your Linux directories. It isn't going to be able to break out of that box, is the key word. So, yes, it can get infected. No, it probably won't be able to complete the infection. And yes, it's super easy to get rid of those infections. Whether it's Play on Linux or whether it's straight Wine or whether you're using Steam on Linux and it's using a Wine thing, they're all basically the same.
There you go. And that's kind of what I thought as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, but an easier way to break it down was to say, and you've already kind of communicated this, but yes, infections can get on your system, but the routes in which they need to go to really do any damage just don't exist on your system. So yes, you technically have infected files. There are malicious things that are trying to act, but they can't act because they don't have the avenues to do it. Now, that being said, to kind of spin off that, if you were working in an environment where, let's say, you have a Linux machine that you're, you know, using Wine, but you also have a Windows machine in your same network, you do need to be careful about possibly cross-contaminating yourself, right?
Well, technically, yes, and kind of no again, because the Linux side will never get infected, technically speaking. Well, what you have to worry about is downloading a file and then forwarding it over to your Windows friends.
Right, and that's the link I meant to say. I mean, I know that I can't just hit it from across the network, but yeah, if you're swapping files between the two different environments, then you need to be careful. Yes. Okay, good.
Yeah, and I'll say the example of why that everything I said is actually true. If you look at all the AV antivirus solutions for Linux, none of them scan for Linux infections.
Mm.
Partially because they don't exist in reality, because they're nothing. There's none in the wild. They don't exist. Exploits might exist in Java that Linux could get infected with, but nobody's using them.
Okay.
So if you install any antivirus on Linux, it's going to scan for Windows EXE infections or infectable files kind of thing. If you're in a mixed network, I actually do suggest you install ClamAV and at least have it run once a night looking for in affected files on your system, because it's very possible you could get a infected PDF or MDB access file or something else. It's definitely possible.
And that's just a good practice, because when I was using Windows primarily, and even when I was doing Linux for customers, at the end of the night, you know, before I went to bed, I mean, you might as well utilize the time, you know, run those AVs at night and then just see what comes up, because you never know. You never know where they've been. You might not remember every place you've been or what you may have caught along the way wherever you normally go. So, cool.
True. And I'll say one of the reasons I feel luckier, I guess, is at my home network, I don't have to worry about anything. The machine that's not Windows, I mean, that isn't Linux, I don't care about.
There you go.
And if it and if it gets infected, I'm willing to bet one of my male organs, it's not going to be because of me. Nothing I do is going to infect that computer. Something someone else does with other organs above the hip will be a Facebook link or something that gets clicked that infects that computer. And if it does, I don't care.
But I really wanted to see that video, honey.
Sorry. not my concern.
Yeah. So, Ryan, go ahead. Sorry.
Now, I was going to say, Ryan really was the person that asked this question to me in the right way that we could answer it like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you could go on and on and cite instances where he was infected, but to really, I mean, and I thank him for contacting us, because it's these sort of simple yet broad questions that really bring us a lot of content and hopefully educate a lot of listeners in order to let them know, hey, this is what's going on, especially in this case. I mean, locking down your system to keep it secure, I mean, that's just, you know, that's just good practice, no matter what kind of OS you're running, right?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to sound dumb, people, but I have tried to get my Linux computers infected now for years. Perfect, for instance, I'll throw out there, while it's not legal, I've tried to do it. I've tried to download UFC fights from torrent sites like the night they happen or the day after they happen, because they're never the real videos. They're always virus-laden files. And I've downloaded them all. I've downloaded a whole bunch of other stuff. I've had other security people in a loop say, okay, if you want to get infected, here's a good file. It's new. It's a new version of this. Go to this website and click that. I've done it on my Linux computer, and it never does anything. And I really want to get infected once just so I can say I got infected, but it's not. It doesn't happen.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there, I'm thinking like a Podnuts, maybe it was a Linux Arrest, but some sort of Podnuts show from me a long time ago. But isn't there a site that you can go to basically that has those type of files listed? Say, hey, if you want to, and it might be just current stuff that's out there, like if you're trying to test your AV, like current infections that are out there, where you can download a file and just see how it operates. Am I wrong?
I want to say there is a malware database. It might be malwaredatabase.net that I'm looking at.
Okay.
There is a couple sites I've heard of in the past where you can go to. You have to register. You have to show competency. It isn't something you can accidentally stumble across. You literally have to go there and expressly ask for these files.
Legitimately search for it.
Yeah.
There you go. And that also might be a good tool, Because, I mean, we see all these different AVs come on the market all the time. Of course, there are the standards, you know, the torchbearers. But testing out these new products, you can read reviews all you want, but until you actually test run it yourself as far as how it works in your hardware, speed, what it catches, try for yourself if you have the ability to do so. And especially not on a day-to-day absolutely needed production machine, because you don't want to cripple it day one. So,
right.
Cool.
Yeah, and I wanted to give a quick update. Me and Steve C have been talking, and one of the things he wanted us to definitely let you guys know is he wants to thank everybody who's been helping with the Kickstarter, who's been pledging money. That is definitely appreciated, number one. But number two, he wants to do more bonuses. So
yep.
Here's the gist of it. If you pledge $50, you will get a free copy of one of the three: Wise Technician, Linux for the Rest of Us, or Tech Site Builder. If you pledge $100, you can pick any of those two: Linux for the Rest of Us, Wise Technician, Tech Site Builder. If you pledge $250, you get all three free. Period. So if you definitely want a little bit more incentive to pledge on his Kickstarter, there's some more incentive, and it is retroactive. If somebody already did pledge $50, you will be available for this. And if you pledge $45, you can go and up your pledge like $5, and then you are eligible for it. It isn't like you have to start from like scratch.
Right. And I will say off the bat, I already own two of those products. I bought the Tech Site Builder and the Linux for the Rest of Us videos back when I was just a listener. And if you haven't listened, if you haven't watched Linux for the Rest of Us videos, obviously Door's coming out with a second version, which I think is going to cover Ubuntu 12.04. Is that correct, Door?
Yeah. That's the probable idea.
Yeah. But yeah, regardless, still very, very viable information that you'll definitely want to have. And if you guys don't know who Chris Berry is, he's the guy that basically Steve C interviewed for Wise Technician. I gotta tell you, 2 years ago I was working 80 hours a week between two full-time jobs. I'm working at night, and the first night that I heard this is the old Podnuts, not Podnuts Daily, but it was the actual the Podnuts show, where Steve C interviewed Chris Berry. That episode, the night that I listened to that episode, I listened to it for 8 hours, just over and over and over and over again, at least 4, 5, 6 times. The next day, just based on what I heard on that, I started constructing my home computer repair business that I ran for almost 2 years, just because he is such an amazing salesperson. If you want to cut through all the stuff, all those hurdles that are potentially stopping you from reaching new customers, adding on different items for sales, based on maybe your apprehension or your fear, these videos in the Wise Technician series are going to be crucial to helping you, I mean, make a lot more money. And you can take every single word he says in those videos, apply it to your local area, apply it to your business, and add a lot more money to your bottom line. Trust me, it worked for me, and it worked for a lot of other people. Go watch testimonials. And to have it thrown in free if you're helping Steve, and don't forget podnuts.com/Kickstarter. Go check it out. You're helping Steve C, and you're helping yourself by getting a huge bonus like this. So, and then Steve C has also said that people do contribute to $50 or more can potentially get a discount on a future series of Wise Technician 2, which is coming out soon.
Right. Yeah. If you pick Wise Technician as your video, you are eligible. You will get 20% off Wise Technician 2. Which I feel safe in saying will be out in less than a month and a half to 2 months. It wouldn't shock me if it's actually quicker, but it is coming out. And I will say, yeah, I've had like 4 or 5 people contact me who I've never heard before comment on those videos, and everything about them was positive.
Yep. Yeah. I can't remember. I'll try to find out before the end of the episode, but go download the feed for the original Podnuts show, not Podnuts Daily, but the original Podnuts. And then it was originally the Roundtable show toward the end there for a while. But yeah, Chris Berry. It was October, I think, 2010 was the month, which is funny that I remember that. But yeah, amazing guy, super nice. and a lot of very valuable information that you will be given for free if you help Steve reach his goal through his Kickstarter. So please check it out. Do yourself a favor. Help out the network. Help out Steve C. And it's a win-win-win-win-win situation.
Right.
Very cool.
Yep. Okay. This next thing I had to make sure that we talked about. I dinged it in the RSS feed, and Cody did the right thing and put it in the notes. The Hobbit is getting ready to come out. If people have not realized what this is, The Hobbit is going to be probably one of the biggest movies of a 4 to 5 year time span. I kind of feel safe saying it's probably going to be as big, if not bigger, than the biggest Harry Potter movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's only because The Hobbit has such a broad reach from people from so long ago up until, you know, kind of recently here. People are just getting into it. I will say, I've had multiple people tell me Tolkien is hard to read. It's very hard to digest the words because of the verbiage that he uses. Mm-hmm. So, hence, hopefully a movie will be much easier to digest. Well, they basically were using Ubuntu in conjunction with, I believe, 3D printers.
Yes.
To make some props and things to show in the Hobbit movie. So this is just another way that Lennox is seen in the wild in a production of something where, quite honestly, money's no object and only the best will do.
Mm-hmm. And this is the company that's utilizing Ubuntu to make this happen is Weta Digital, WETA, and they handle all the special effects for all of Peter Jackson's films, all the Lord of the Rings trilogy, King Kong, all the mocap work. And then now they're utilizing Ubuntu, like Doris said, to make props with 3D printers, props, set pieces, and entire sets made out of this plastic. So, and they really are pioneers. If you research their history, what they've done, they will literally take a good idea and make it better. And what they've done in this case, and if you watch the video on the link we'll provide in the show notes, it's quite amazing what they've done with these 3D printers, because they've actually attached a 3D printer to this other machine where they can make even larger items, to where they were talking about making, like, for those of you who've seen the films of Bilbo Baggins' home, they're trying to reconstruct his entire home made by pieces made by one of these 3D printers. So they attached one of these printers to this large, also mechanical arm crane, where they can make even larger items with this device, all using Linux. And it's amazing.
Dude, that big arm almost reminds me of, like, auto lines.
Right. Yeah. 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 Arms. Yeah. You look at this, it looks like something you'd see in like a GM's factory, you know, assembling the pieces to the door and then slamming into the body of the car. I mean, yeah, it's just. And I got to tell you, these guys, and one thing I love about Weta Digital, because I used to do multimedia production and design, not only their level of commitment to taking technology as far as they can go, making their special effects and making their work very well known, but a lot of them have great senses of humor. As a side note, go search for Gollum at the MTV Movie Awards. And he actually accepted an award on behalf of Andy Serkis, the guy who did the mocap for Gollum. This was like, 2003 or something, and it's just hilarious. But those guys actually made Gollum happen in that video, and it's just awesome. So, yeah, and to see them using Linux in this instance instead of Windows or some or more Mac OS, which of course is, and I mean, if you're talking about high end audio production, high end video production, special effects, it's usually 3D Studio on through PC, or it's Maya through Mac, right? So to see them, a huge studio, huge provider of special effects, using Linux to do something like this, it's just one more way that they're bringing it to the forefront of everyone's mind, and I love it.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say one of the best inroads Linux has in mass multimedia is special effects.
Yep.
And I think it's only going to grow. It's only going to keep getting deeper. I don't know if Blender is one of the reasons I don't know, because I don't understand that stuff at all, but I will say Lightworks is supposed to be out here fairly recently soon.
Yep.
And if that is a fraction of as good as they say it's going to be, I expect that to make some inroads too here in the next year or two.
Oh, you bet. And years ago when they were making the second Star Wars trilogy, I remember picking up a copy of Linux Journal where they were using it to make some of the special effects for Yoda. And of course, with Disney recently purchasing Lucasfilm, who knows, we might see some more Linux in action, making some huge blockbuster special effects films. So really, 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 really looking forward to that. And I commend Weta Digital for using this. Obviously, I mean, to cut costs and to save a lot of money, but also they're using a stable platform, makes some really, really good things happen.
Yeah, and just a quick side tangent note. I felt very one way about Lucas. I just found out recently that he is going to get a quote-unquote value of $4.05 billion for selling all of Lucas to Disney. Before this happened, it turned out, this is what I heard and read a couple places, no other organization, company, or institution in the history of time has ever donated more money to education than his firm that he has specifically set up for this to give money out. He said all $4.05 billion is going to be donated to education.
Wow.
So that makes me feel much, 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 much better about the man himself. And I'll say, I'm looking forward to possibly better Star Wars stuff coming, and more than likely better Indiana Jones stuff coming.
But I got to say, if we're going to go in depth about Star Wars and how awesome it could be, we got to bring a certain Tommy Ake Johnson, a.k.a. Sean Dirty Thumbs Johnson, on the show. Let's talk about that, because he's the expert.
He won't stop talking about it. I told him he needs to talk to Nightwise or somebody about doing a Star Wars podcast, because right now is to strike when it's hot.
You got that right. Dude, I'll send him something my way. I got something in the works. Let's just say that. I got something in the works, and it's going to be beneficial to those film fans. Let's just say that.
Right. Cool.
Very cool. What else we got, Dor?
Okay, well, this next thing I actually saw, I almost forgot about, but then I had, I believe it was 5150 and one other person, it might have been John Miller on Google Plus, hit me off about this. Dude, I love the idea of this. I love the concept of this. I love everything about this, except for the fact that if I tried to do this, I would probably burn down my house.
Right.
Because I can't put nothing together. Even if I would have to go get everything prefab done to where I just like glue it together or something.
Or use.
Because even with the drill, I'd probably take a finger off.
Right. If you had a way to assemble it, like you would like buy a desk at your local office place, right? Then it would be fine. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I could see if anyone had any common sense among them at all, making something like this prefab and selling it as a completed unit, where all you would have to do is put the legs on. Okay, now we danced around too long. This is a coffee table pie. PIE, Raspberry Pi. Okay, the gimmick of it is it's a coffee table. It looks like it's about the size of your normal coffee table, but the middle is a big screen, and he has what looks like one joystick and four buttons, I believe, connected to it.
I think it's two buttons in the front, two buttons on the actual tabletop surface.
Right. Two is like player one, player two, two player option, and then two buttons. And it's basically a computer in the coffee table running Raspberry Pi, but he has it apparently hyper geared towards running emulators of old arcade games.
Yes.
I just got to say, I think this is genius. I think the work that the guy put together this, it looks pretty quality to me. I do know from my years of looking into it, never actually acting on it, the quality of joystick and buttons you buy directly determines how long they will last.
Yes.
Weeks, months, or years.
Yep.
So if you look into this at all, do not hesitate on getting quality joysticks and quality buttons, because they literally will take a beating.
Oh, yes.
Right. And I mean, just putting a pie on is just smart.
For those of you who want a more of a visual, now, see, I had the luck of having awesome parents to where literally all the pop culture references I get and understand, I probably get them from people 10 years senior, my age or older, just because I grew up in a mall. My parents owned a shop in a mall across the way from an arcade, and I was given privilege to go to the arcade, and I had my own little special chair. I would stand on the machines because I was like 4 or 5. I would play these arcade games. What this thing reminds me of is those sit-down arcade games. I'm talking like two-player Pac-Man. You'd sit at like the pizza parlor and play. This thing is awesome. And when you see stuff, when you see guys make things like this, you think in your mind, okay, it's plywood with some sort of CRT that they injected in the middle of it with like a crappy like polycarbonate top and see-through. No, this thing looks like, imagine like the lining of like a pro-end, like high-end like poker table with like the plush like wrist rests. And with the, I mean, the nice, actually, let me go to the photo. Yeah, the nice ball top, joystick, and then the buttons. This thing looks professionally built, and man, yeah. And to have it run on a Raspberry Pi, I mean, it's just amazing. And man, like, if I had the time and the money, I would totally make one of these.
Oh,
I would totally make one of these. Sorry.
Sorry, that's okay. I'll say, when I looked at it, the only thing I thought is, this is something a decade ago or so, if someone had this in your house, you would think they were stinking rich, like absurdly stinking rich. And quite literally, you could probably put this together for maybe now $150. You know, that's what, you know, really impresses me.
Definitely. And I will say, from my experience, for those of you who don't know, I'm a big video game nut. I play fighting games. I wouldn't say professionally, but I play tournaments, and I own my own several fight sticks. I play a variety of games. I have since I was about 10. So if you are looking to build one of these, and I'll try to include this in the show notes, or maybe even try to, I want to build one of these myself. But anyway, if you're looking to buy sticks and buttons, there are two sites you need to go to. One is focusattack.com, and the brand, and the other site is arcadeshock.com. The brand of sticks you want to look for is Sanwa. That's Sanwa. It's a Japanese stick with a ball top. Now, they are definitely one of the manufacturers of some of the highest, most respected sticks and buttons in the world. However, they're not going to emulate what you possibly grew up with as a kid in the United States. There's the ball top, and then there's the bat top, which is more of an elongated oval top. You can get the Sanwa sticks and get the bat top tops for them. And the traditional arcade buttons that we grew up with in the U.S., they're almost like a concave buttons, whereas the Sanwa are bubble buttons. But the Sanwa buttons, they take a beating, and they even have silent ones now where you can rattle that stick around, and it doesn't even make a sound. So go check out those two sites if you're looking at building a home coffee table, a Raspberry Pi top like this, or perhaps a home arcade cabinet, which there are MAME cabinet, which there are all sorts of schematics for online. But yeah, we go check out those two sites and research Sanwa.
Yeah, and I'll say on focusattack.com, it gains instant credibility with me just because when I load it, I see Ken and Guile from Street Fighters. That's instant credibility.
Yep. On the one page I loaned it, it was Ryu, Cammy, and then you see Sea Viper and Rose. But then again, I know those because Del Fuerte, King Frito, and Bison in the back. Yeah. I'm just a huge Street Fighter nut. Been a Street Fighter nut forever. But yeah, focusstack.com. I've ordered from them myself. Awesome, awesome place. Yeah. So for those of you guys who are into gaming, I mean, yeah. These things you can build with the Raspberry Pi. Once again, we were talking about last week. I'm excited. I just ordered one. Cannot wait to get it to try it out.
Right. Now, for something near absurdly completely different. Okay. Here in the United States, we do not even have this option available to us unless you go completely aftermarket, which means no warranty. Over in the UK, there is a manufacturer of Android smartphones called Extremer Mobile, and that's extremermobile.com. I highly encourage anyone over across the pond, check this manufacturer out. Okay. They make Android phone. That's not incredibly crazy with hardware specs. It isn't like a 5.5 inch screen. It isn't like an 8-megapixel camera. It isn't like insane resolution on the screen or anything like that, but it is indeed special. And here's why. When you buy it, what you get is an Android device that is already A, completely rooted, B, comes already loaded with a Cyanogen mod that is verified to work completely well with the hardware, and three, you will get all of your updates via Clockwork Mod Recovery, which means no annoying pop-ups for updates from Sprint or whoever else saying, you have an update, do you want it? You have an update, do you want it? Do you have an update, do you want it? From the day you have this device, you own your device. You have complete control over your device. And it looks like it's £199, which I believe is a fair price. But you also get three quote-unquote free gifts, which is a Wi-Fi hotspot is one of them. A free Wi-Fi hotspot you just plug up and plug in. You get a free mini travel router. That's the hotspot. A free silicone case and a free invisible screen protector. So for £199, it looks like you get all four of these things in one bundle. I'm jealous. I kind of wish I lived over the pond.
Yeah, you really, I mean, this reminds me of something I saw a few months ago. I want to say it was Xia, but it was this awesome Android device available in China. It's XIA or Sha, as you can pronounce it. But yeah, I mean, you're seeing a lot of these independent hardware companies make these awesome devices. And I'm really excited to see something like this because, I mean, you figure, for instance, today, my wife and I went down to Radio Shack. Radio Shack, if you're listening, I love you. We went and bought, added an extra line to our contract for Sprint, and got my wife a Samsung Galaxy S3. Now, if I were to buy that phone retail, right, $649, £199 equals $318. Now, you might still say, that's quite a bit of money, but you got to figure, if you're buying this outright, you're not confined to a contract. You can be on your carrier for 2 months and be like, you know what? I don't really like the coverage here. I'm going to go to another one that supports the chip in my phone. So $318 outright, not being locked into a contract. It's a great device. Look at the specs for this. I mean, it's pretty respectable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say, over there, one of the big differences is almost nobody's on a contract. Virtually everybody is on month by month. There are instances where, you know, you do pay on a contract basis, but you basically buy data cards with either a limited amount of data on it or you pay per month unlimited data.
There you go.
We definitely do not have that over here. Yet another reason why I'm a little jealous. And it has dual SIMs, which I believe is very important over there in certain areas.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, and of course it comes preloaded with Ice Cream Sandwich 4.0.3, which is very fair.
Yep.
Very fair. I mean, just because you don't get Jelly Bean doesn't mean it sucks. But it's going to be Clockwork Mod accessible, which means you can load different ROMs on it. I mean, can't beat it.
Definitely. And if you guys know anything about rooting ROM on your phones, make Clockwork Mod. You know, they've been in the game for a long time. And their interfaces have just gotten better over the years as far as getting software updates, flashing new ROMs onto your device. So to see, not only see a device enter the market at this price point, but have that type of capability right off the bat, have it rooted, have it completely open for you to do with what you want. I definitely like this.
Yep, and here's just a couple of the specs real quick. It is a 5-inch display, so I stand corrected. It's a 5-inch display. It is a touch screen, GSM Edge Network, YCDMA, which is virtually, I think, everything over there. It has a 4 gig of internal RAM, 32 gigabyte ROM, so it's 32 gigs of internal storage with a micro SD card up to 32 gigs. So it's not SD. It is SDHC, but not better. Camera, 5 megapixel autofocus camera. That's good. The CPU, it says, is a 1 gigahertz MTK6575. I have no idea what that means, but I gotta believe it's not a horrible chip. I believe it's a fair chip.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I'll have to look at the specs later, but I can't see them releasing it with some really, really slow piece of junk, especially at that price point. So I wish them luck. And if you guys are looking to buy a phone out of contract and you can't afford the $500 to $700 price point or some things you have to buy locally, yeah, check this out. Let us know what you think. Read the reviews first, obviously. And good luck. If you do buy it, please let us know.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure this is T-Mobile network friendly. I don't know how AT&T friendly. I don't believe it's Verizon friendly at all. And I'm thinking it's not Sprint friendly either.
So just like the Nexus 4 then.
You said it. No.
I did say it and I will say it. Hey, Google, I want a Nexus 4 and I'm a Sprint customer. Guess what? There are more. All right.
Okay. This next one I've actually had sitting on the side for a little bit. I just thought about bringing it. Okay. First off, out of the way, there used to be a very horrible band in the U.S. called NSYNC. This has nothing to do with them.
Nope.
Okay. There's a repository you can add for your Ubuntu, Mint, and Debian called NSYNC. I-N-S-Y-N-C. NSYNC repository. And what it is, it's the unofficial Google Drive client. If you really, really want simplicity via a PPA and Google Drive support and the promise of future updates, you might want to look into this. I've been perfectly fine with using my Google CL command line thing to sync when I wanted it to sync. But this is a GUI, which I do believe has a fair amount of options. I'm not going to say a great amount of options, but a good amount of options if you so desire it. Here's the plus. Integrates with Nautilus or Dolphin, the two biggest file managers in Linux kind of thing. Works inside of Unity, GNOME Shell, Cinnamon, KDE 4, Mate, and XFCE. So that's four, you know, six desktops right there. Six of probably the more popular desktops.
Definitely.
So that's another plus. It also says it does support installing on Fedora, Red Hat, Open Source, Arch, Mepis, and PC Linux OS. So it's safe to say they have their bases covered.
Yeah, anything you can do to enhance your ability to control your content on your Google Drive account, especially having something like this specifically geared toward your OS and your potential distro and your desktop environment, you know, why not give it a try?
Yeah, just looks good. If you need it, you need it, you need it. Go check it out. Let us know what you think.
And I haven't tried the command line interface for that. I'll have to talk to you about that after the show and maybe give a review on it myself because, man, I gotta be honest with you, I just don't utilize the command line enough. And I probably utilize it more than some, but I want to get more adept at it. So,
yeah.
Very okay. Cool.
This next thing I had to bring up because even Jeff Owens asked me about it. Jeff Owens, he's a guy that uses whatever he needs to use to get the job done. On his desktop, he frequently uses Linux Mint because once you have it installed, you don't have to do almost anything else to get what you want done.
Yep.
there's a certain simplicity to that that certain people really like and hang on to, which I can't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things about your standard Ubuntu install is it does not come with proprietary codecs for instance, DVD and Blu-ray. So he literally loaded Ubuntu, put in a DVD, and said, what in the hell? Why isn't this thing working? So I figured if Jeff asked, there has to be more people out there with help. And I will say there's two ways you can do it. I will ask people to really listen to the first way, okay? There's a codec pack you can buy. And if you do plan on buying it, I suggest you do not buy it from the software center, but you actually go to the end website, which is Fluendo is the name of the manufacturer, and I believe it is Fluendo.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go there, buy their codec pack. Here's why. A, you get more than just DVD and Blu-ray, number one. But number two, you literally get a higher quality codec, okay? Even though the other ones might work with DVD, you will technically get better looking DVDs on the exact same hardware using this codec pack. And you're supporting a company doing this, and you're supporting legality, dare I say.
Well, and more importantly, you are supporting them directly. You're giving them, potentially, depending on what they're using, all the money, as opposed to having it go through a third party and them taking their cut. And probably, and as to what you already alluded to, you're getting the more up-to-date version, which they will purposely only offer through their specific first-party channels.
Yeah, and you will get a little bit more, and they even have G Streamer on Android. Where if you're a Linux guy, if they can get G Streamer working on Android, then we should be able to stream a whole lot of different content in good quality right to our Android devices. So that would be really cool. And of course, the other way is to just go install the codecs from the Ubuntu Software Center that give you read access. Now, I do not believe this contains Blu-ray codec whatsoever. It's only DVD, and it's called libdvdread4, libdvdread, and the number 4. That will let you watch DVDs. So that's the quote-unquote easy way out.
But still, having that functionality and being able to support those who support you by supporting that functionality, yeah, definitely go check out Fluendo.com.
Yeah, to me, they're just good people literally trying to be legal and trying to help people be legal. They also have supposedly a higher end quality codec for MP3.
Yes.
Which I haven't checked out yet, but supposedly, if I have my normal install and I encode MP3 128, and then I buy this codec and encode MP3 128, someone with better ears than myself supposedly can almost easily tell the difference between the two files. And that is kind of important in my eyes.
Interesting. Yeah, I've never purchased it before. I'm going to go check it out tonight when we get off the show. And plus, you got to realize, too, I mean, if you're thinking about helping someone convert to Linux, which is something we've been speaking about for a long time, especially touched more on the base last week, some of those questions may be like, can I play my MP3s on Linux? Can I watch DVDs on Linux? So those are two very important pieces, because it's just, I mean, you know, everyday computing is one thing, but people being able to enjoy their media on a new platform, that's going to be especially important when they're looking into converting or at least dipping their toe in. So we might as well have those things available. And on an extended portion of that argument, we might as well provide them with 100% legal options to do that. And this is enabling them to do that. And I thank Fluendo for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't care about legal, especially if you're looking for spousal approval, or if you want to do a HTPC kind of thing, I think there shouldn't even be a choice. Get the paid codec. You will be thankful.
Definitely. And it'll be worth the money in the long run. Okay. One last thing, it looks like, before we hit voicemails and emails. And this I saw today and I was very excited. Finally, it's happened. I don't know if you heard all those wings flapping, but those were all the pigs flying today when Steam for Linux beta launched today, November 6th, Election Day 2012. For those of you who are gamers,
you call me off guard with that one, man.
Dude, that's how I do it. I layer it in, man. It's like a little burrito. All of a sudden, you're like, whoa, there's cilantro in there? Yeah, you're already eating the burrito. There's a whole other layer of flavor, right, that you just didn't, out of nowhere. You're like, is that cinnamon? It is. That's me. That's how I do it. But for those of you who are gamers, those of you who are hardcore, casual, whatever, you know Steam. For those of you who don't know Steam, I'll tell you what Steam is. Steam is the largest, dare I say, digital distributor of PC games worldwide. Now, they have a large network. There are other competitors and other partners that are sort of meshed into their network. But if you think about that game, let's say, I mean, it's 2012. Let's say back in 1995. You had this game, let's say it was, I don't know, Civilization 2. That, man, you were in high school, you were in college, you were playing Civ 2, PC version for the longest time. You loved Civ 2, and you really want to take back that you really want to experience that again. Well, they don't make Civ 2 anymore. You can't find it on physical disc. If you do, you find it on eBay, you're not going to have the activation code, you don't know if it's broken, scratched, whatever. You can buy it on a digital copy of it on Steam. And I'm not even talking about old games, I'm talking about current games too. Steam is a great service. They run a lot of specials all the time. But primarily, if you think about the one big argument, the one big hurdle to people switching from Windows to Linux is, can I play Call of Duty on it? Can I play Diablo 3 on it? Can I play quote unquote current games on it? This is going to knock that argument out of the park. Steam launched their beta today on Linux. Now, they extended opportunity for beta invites to the community 2-3 weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. I got my invite, didn't act on it fast enough, I guess, because I didn't get into the beta today, but I will soon, I'm sure. But they have a great lineup of games available, and I'm not talking about games you haven't heard of. I'm talking about big titles. Like, I believe Portal 2 is one of those games. Okay.
Well, there is a link in this ubuntu.co.uk where it says 25 games, where it's store.steampower.com search, blah, 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 blah. And they say there's 26 games. I do see games like Team Fortress, World of Goo, which had to be in there, Frozen Synapse, Waveform, Darwinia, Aquaria,
Trying
Space
to.
Pirates. Yeah, I do not see Portal.
Okay, Portal 2 was rumored. I'm sure they'll have that soon. And you got to also remember, one of the initial test games they used to test this out was Left 4 Dead 2. And if you guys love zombies, or if you love, more importantly, shooting zombies, Left 4 Dead 2, it's got to be on the way soon. This is obviously just them testing the waters, seeing, okay, how many people who are running Linux are actually going to use this service? And then there, after a certain point, I would have to assume, and yes, I'm going to assume on air, on record, for the internet and the world to know in the future, that they're going to open the floodgates once this thing takes off to a certain degree. And you can help by saying, yes, I want to be a part of this beta program. Because, I mean, you got to understand, those of you who aren't gamers, I mean, or aren't hardcore gamers, there's probably that kind of game that you wouldn't mind playing for 15 to 30 minutes a day or a week or whatever. This is going to make that possible on Linux. And I'm talking about games where you can go to your friend and they can be like, well, yeah, I have that on Windows too. Oh, you do? Well, it's now available on Linux. Have you heard of Linux? And be able to talk to people and bring them into the community potentially over time. This is going to knock down that one big hurdle that I think a lot of people are not coming to our platform because of these games not being available. And now that argument is going to be moot soon. So to see something like this, I'm very excited about it. I cannot wait to try it out on my system because I have a system that will knock this down, knock it out of the park, and will run these games perfectly. So I'm very, very excited to see this.
Yeah, and I do think they are going to go full-fledged with support, as much support as they can possibly get as quick as possible kind of thing.
Right. And one of the things that helped make this happen, one of the higher-ups at Steam, basically, he has a huge disdain for Windows 8, and I'm not letting any sort of cat out of the bag. I mean, he's talked about it publicly ever since, even before launch, how he hates Windows 8. He hates the fact that it's a garbage platform for gamers, and he wanted to provide an alternative. Therefore, that hopefully helped this project fast track and bring it to where we are today, the very first day of launch. So if you haven't contributed, if you haven't signed up to be a part of this beta program, I urge you to do it. Even if it's just to try one of the simple games, just to see how it runs in your system and give them any sort of feedback to help them make their product better and get it in the hands of more people, therefore potentially getting more people to use Linux. So do what you can, sign up for it, and let's see what happens.
Right. Well, the last second thing I wanted to throw in there, I agree. Gaming in any fashion is good. I will agree with Jonathan Nadeau's comments of he's afraid this could potentially lead to future locking down of Linux. While I do think it's possible, I do think if that does happen, it's going to be very minimal set of people, very minimal set of distributions, very minimal set of tools. I do believe in the end, more open stuff will succeed. And I did have somebody, I forgot, Cody, email me or Google Plus me after last week's show and asked me to please stop forgetting to mention, because I teased it months and months ago, a game called Oil Rush. And that is at oilrush-game.com. Navy strategy game. So it's kind of like Command and Conquer-esque, but you're totally on water. This game natively supports Linux, Mac, OS X, everything. I've had two people tell me by far best looking game they've ever seen. And it's only $19. And supposedly you can even run it on Android, iOS, and PS3. Except, you know, also including Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Very cool. Moving forward, what I'm going to try to do is sort of the end of our news segment or topic segment. I'm going to have my one last thing, which will kind of be my launching pad, for if you will, for my question of the week. A couple weeks ago, I asked you guys about your experience with kids and Linux, which we'll address in some of the emails tonight, and thank you for those. But what I want to hear from you guys in the next week is, what do you think about this? Steam coming to Linux. In the case of what Dora mentioned with Jonathan Nadeau, and I argued / commented / talked with him about OLF on this, my opinions versus his opinions. And I want to save my opinions and his opinions. Potentially he can come on the show and talk about it, but I want to save that for another show, to follow up to this question. But what do you guys think about this? Do you think that it's going to open the floodgates for proprietary software to come in onto our platform? Or do you think it's an overall good thing for the community? Do you want to see more people using Linux? I have my opinions. I'm holding the reins with my pinkies right now because they're almost gone. I'm almost about ready to unload on some of these things, right? But I will save it for another show because there's plenty more time. We got hundreds, if not thousands, of more episodes to come. But please email us at podcast@linuxtherestofus.com. Hit up myself or Dor on Google Plus. Let us know what you think. Give us a quick blurb. Give us a long blurb. We'll inject it into the show. It'll help us with our overall discussion of this heading into the future, because this thing is only going to get bigger, hopefully, in my opinion.
All right.
Very cool. All right. Well, that was our last topic for the week. We're going to go ahead and roll into voicemails first, as per usual. Dor, do you have that voicemail? We got a great voicemail from Nightwise. If you guys don't know Nightwise, he runs his own podcast. Great guy. Not only a fan of Linux, but also Windows and OS X. Basically, much like Dor has communicated in the past, you know, use what you want to get what you need. Something along those lines.
Close.
Yeah, close enough. But he's a lover of all things tech, and he sent in about a 3-minute voicemail, which is very appropriate to my previous question, is about children using Linux, or basically people using Linux for either the first time or as their own OS. So we'll go ahead and have Dor play that voicemail for you. Now.
Hey guys, this is Nightwise from Nightwise.com calling, and I wanted to answer the question, at what age people started to use Linux? Now, Coop, I know that you wanted to ask it what young age some people are starting to use Linux. I'll give you another example. I'll give you the oldest person I know who started using Linux. My wife's grandmother is pretty into games. She loves her little Sudoku games, and she has had some of these portable video games for years. And about 5 years ago, she got a second-hand computer from my father-in-law. It was a Windows 98 machine. It was an old IBM ThinkPad, and she loved to play some simple games on that. But after about a year, it died. So we decided to get her a new laptop. But because I didn't want to be troubled with having, you know, to go over there and fix things, and because she wanted to play free games, I decided why not put Linux on her laptop. So back then I installed Ubuntu, I think it was 9.4, on her laptop. It could have been earlier. And installed all the games that she could play. And lo and behold, she has been on Linux ever since. 2 years later, we bought her the first EEE PC. We imported it from the States, especially for her. She loved it. That was her second Linux laptop. And now she has a newer machine, which is her third Linux laptop. It's been running Linux Mint for the last 2 years. And that lady is now 84 years old and running Linux every single day. She is on the internet, she's on Facebook, she plays games, she visits the senior citizen sites. We haven't got her on forums just yet, but she loves to Skype us at the most strange times of the day, and she's really tech savvy. Maintenance on that machine is almost non-existent. When we go over for pie and coffee, I just do a sudo apt-get and I upload all the packages, and for the rest, it's been a very, very stable environment for her. She would not find her way around Windows 8. It would take a lot of family support, and she needs a system that just works. 85 years old on her third Linux laptop and loving every single bit of it. I wrote up an article on my blog about it. I'll see if I can find the link. But she is also in the Ubuntu wiki documentation page. Just look for Ubuntu Granny and you'll find a picture of her in the official Ubuntu documentation. This was Nightwise from Nightwise.com signing off.
Very cool. You just don't get stories better than that, do you, Dor?
No, and I'll say anytime Nightwise wants airtime on Linux for the rest of us, all he has to do is ask, because he only brings good stuff.
Yeah, I got to say, that episode where he interviewed you, and I've listened to several of his shows. I mean, he brings a lot to his shows. It's his own particular flavor, his own perspective, but it's always very entertaining no matter what he's talking about. So if you guys haven't listened to any of his shows, definitely check him out, nightwise.com. Thank you very much, Nightwise, for sending that voicemail. And this is something that I really like to see. I'm going to throw these questions out there because I like to get discussions going. We're living in the modern age where we're able to communicate with each other in at such a rate and pace where we've never really met before. He took my question that I threw out there and hit the opposite end of the coin, or the opposite side of the coin, I guess I should say. Not only the youngest person, but the oldest person he knew. And it's just as important. I mentioned this last week, but my one of my best friends, his mother had never used a PC before, and he started off her with Linux about 10 years ago. And she doesn't do much, but it's all she's ever known as far as an environment, and she loves it, and it's stable, and it works for her. Whereas if she was on another operating system, perhaps she'd have more problems. Perhaps, maybe, possibly. Can't tell. But yeah, definitely seeing another perspective on something like this was definitely eye-opening, and I cannot wait to check out those articles and her in the wiki to see pictures of her potentially in front of that laptop. I think that'd be very, very heartwarming.
Right. Yeah. I will say, no matter what, I think you're in for an interesting computing voyage with your son, as I know I am, because, you know, they're going to be positive about some things, they're going to be negative about some things. Neither one we're going to be able to guess which one they're going to be about.
Right.
And as things change to us, they're going to see it changing in front of their face. And it's going to be a question of, do they like the constant monitoring changing of X, or do they like the slow and stable of Y? Or, you know, it's going to be nonstop interesting. I'll just say that.
Definitely, especially this time point in time where tablets and slash touch interfaces are becoming so much more prevalent in the marketplace, and more people are being able to use them and get them get in their hands based on the fact that the prices are coming down. So yeah, I'm trying to. I mean, you can look at how to educate your children and things, but some of the stuff I've read it just isn't modern. So I'm trying to come up with my own ways to introduce tech to him and to get him. And that's the reason why I asked this. And I think everyone who's contributed to this question I put out there, because I'm trying to figure out a good way, and through your experiences and through my own, in order to get my son interested in tech in a way that's going to be beneficial to him at such an early age to where he really latches onto it. It's really a big part of his life. So thank you very much for all that. We'll go ahead and roll into the voicemails now. Okay. And thank you again, Nightwise, for sending in that. Oh, excuse me. I just pulled the Steve C. I'm heading into the emails now. Yeah, Steve C is contagious. Voicemails are for voice and emails are for writing. Thank you, Nightwise, for sending that voicemail. The first email recently, Kevin O'Brien, of course, a great guy from the OLF, asked us to put this out there. Ohio Linux Fest is looking for someone to step up and take on the role of volunteer coordinator for OLF 2013. No previous experience is required. This could be a great opportunity for someone who would like to be involved with a major event and help give back to the open source community. If anyone is interested, please reply to news@ohiolinux.org. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for throwing that out there. And I will say, I responded to Kevin asking him for more details on what might be involved in that coordinator position. Although that was just a couple of 3 hours ago, so he has yet to get back to me. I will do an update next week, just so that you guys have more of a kind of perspective on what you might be signing up for. Because I got to tell you, when I first saw this, I thought, oh my God, I'd be perfect for that, because I've done management of small and larger groups, and I would love to do that. But I also thought of my state of mind at OLF based on how much alcohol I consumed and how much fun I was having. I thought maybe I wouldn't be the best person for that job. Go ahead, Dor.
To be honest, the only thing I would ask is whoever takes this under their wing, I would beg them to at least record like half an hour a week or so of things you've learned, trials and tribulations, and like publish them as like HBR podcast.
There you go.
Because this kind of knowledge is extremely needed. And what I mean is a long-standing community conference like OLF has immense amounts of data to share about the processes that they do that other conferences might not even know about.
Yep.
I think it would be a tremendous way for whoever does it to be able to give back. I'll say my worst facet of my job is organization. I constantly get reminded of it on my yearly evaluations. So I'm not going to get in and mess up OLF.
Well, you know what? As much as I love the open source community, I mean, obviously, I'm here talking to you now. And as much fun as I had at OLF, and as much as I would love to contribute to it, I'm going to contact him and see what I can do to help, even in a small capacity. So if anyone's interested in that whatsoever, please reply to news@ohiolinux.org. Or you can send us anything and we'll try to forward it off. But please try to just send it directly to them. That way they can converse. But like I said, I contacted Kevin asking for some more details, and we will definitely follow that up on the next show to get you guys some more information on that. Because anything that we can do to make the next OLF better than the past 10, and yes, I said 10, this is their 11th. And yeah, just like Dor was saying, they've been around the block a few times. They know what they want and they know how to make things successful. So being able to tap into that knowledge base and figure out what they need and what they've seen as being successful and not successful, it's going to help you in the future, and you helping the community. Of course, that's what we're all about. So thank you, Kevin, for writing that in. We hope to help you secure a person for that position ASAP. Okay.
Yeah, and I would say if someone does pick up on this and they don't know how to do the podcast stuff, I'll be happy to help out there. All you'd have to do is join either a Google Plus Hangout, a Skype communication, or a Mumble server. I'll do all the recording, all the editing for you.
Very good. Very good. And anything I can do to help as well, please let me know. Anything that we can do, we'll always do for you guys. Okay, our good friend Kevin Barry writes, "Hey Steve, it was great seeing you again at OLF this year, and before I go on any further, I would like to say your session was great. You did something I don't think I could ever do. I hope you'll be put in for a talk next year. As you know, I support Podnuts and Linux to the rest of us with my purchases of products, and I find it very worthwhile. The point of this email is that some time ago, I bought your videos in the hopes of learning a little more about installing and using Linux. The reason I'm bringing it up now is that I attended the all-day How to Get Started and Install session at OLF. I wanted to try a person right there in the room showing me how to do it scenario. I don't want to offend anyone, but there were some technical glitches, but after having experienced it personally, I can honestly say I got so much more out of your videos than that class at roughly 5 times the price. That is just one more reason I feel good about having supported in some small way to your Kickstarter and will continue to do what little I can to support you and recommend your work. Thanks, Kevin, aka KB Nexus."
Yeah, Kevin's very cool. We definitely hung out for a little bit there at OLF.
Kevin was very cool. I know some of you guys by your nicknames, your handles on the forums and the shows. But I remember meeting Kevin. We were riding on an elevator, and we were sitting at sitting at a table the night where we were talking to Mad Dog at the table. And I asked him. I said, "I'm Cody Cooper. Who are you?" He goes, "I know who you are, Cody." And I was like, "Oh, okay." He introduced himself, and he's very, very polite, very cool guy. And I don't think he would offend anyone through that comment. I mean, it's literally, and I asked permission from him to post that as is the message. Because he didn't want to talk bad about OLF or who was running that class, but ultimately that was his personal experience. And worst case scenario, it's just going to make that class better next year. Potentially get Door to have a longer talk in a bigger room next year, and overall make OLF better and the overall experience of whoever attends it better. So thank you, Kevin, for writing in. We appreciate your personal experience, and I couldn't tell you, I could not agree more with how awesome Door's talk was. I did not attend the class that you did, how to install Linux, but Door's talk was awesome, and Door, thank you again for being there, getting me there, and making it an overall great, great weekend.
No problem at all. It was just solid fun, and I will put in for another talk, probably 2 more talks, to be honest. And the branch has been put out there. Anything OLF wants from me, pretty much, I will do everything in my power to satisfy, because I only want to see OLF become bigger, better, more popular, more people.
There you go. And yeah, I'm putting in for at least 1 talk next year, and I will be talking at the North East Linux Fest in March. But we'll get to more of that later. Just a little teaser. But yeah, I'll have something to bring to that conference as well. Okay, on to the next email. John Zimmerman writes, "Cody, I like that Boxy is always trying out new things. The last cool thing they did was to offer a USB dongle that you plugged into the Boxy box, and then you plugged in a coaxial cable from an external old school antenna. This is great for cord cutters, and the free local TV and HD quality is better than that from your local cable company, John." John, I got to tell you, I didn't know that they offered something like this. I mean, obviously, you guys know Boxy. If you don't know Boxy, boxy.tv, that's boxee.tv. Check them out. They have a couple of Linux-based set-top boxes and very, very cool interfaces, very, very unique physical design for the boxes, the newer version of which is coming out to Walmart. So, you know, Steve C. will be seeing one in person at 3 a.m. sometime soon. But to have a USB dongle where it have a coax end on one end where you can plug in like an old kind of rabbit ears style, but HD TV antenna to get your local channels, that is awesome. Because I got to tell you, it's probably about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, my wife and I cut the cord. We don't pay for cable anymore. I get it for her during the summer so she can watch her True Blood and her HBO shows. But beyond that, we don't pay for it year-round. And a buddy of mine recently bought one of those Sony televisions, the 3D televisions that they were selling. It was kind of a PS3 branded one where you could do split screen, but two people could be standing at different angles of the television seeing their own version of the screen. But he plugged in one of these HD antennas to the coax port on that, and he's able to get local television on that. So to have that capability to Boxy go that one step further and say, we want to offer this additional thing to our customers, that is awesome. And I'll have to go check that out. Thank you very much, John, for writing in about that. What do you have to say about that, Dor?
Yeah, that's really cool. I did hear about that Boxy thing before, but I wasn't sure what it was.
Well, so for the people who are thinking about cutting the cord, I think that there are three major avenues, three major hurdles, much like the gaming on Linux hurdle, right? One, am I going to be able to watch my local news? Two, am I going to be able to get my premium movie channels? And three, am I going to be able to watch sports? Right? Because right. Those are the three things that people probably really, really watch. I mean, arguably, it's their sitcoms or whatever, but they can utilize those through Hulu Plus more often than not nowadays. But this knocks one of those hurdles out of the gate, right? If you can watch your local channels, you're going to be able to check that local news, potentially watch those sitcoms, and depending on does NFL airs through ESPN now, right?
Some of it is still on the NFL Network.
Okay, yeah. So you could potentially still catch some sports or something like this, and plus it's an antenna, so it's free. You're not paying for it. It's just your local channels that you're getting through your Boxy box and through your television. So to have them offer a device like this, I think it's great.
I agree.
Thank you, John, for writing in on that. For those of you thinking about cutting the cord, of course, our good friend Tracy Holtz, huge cord cutter, huge proponent of it. Even had a podcast about it for a while. Check him out at on Google Plus as Tracy Holtz. That's TracyHolz. Or of course, he and our friend, good friend Russ Winter, also contribute to the Techie Geek podcast at the Techie Geek. I can't speak tonight. TheTechieGeek.com. So
thank you for to say
yes. Okay, and speaking of Jeff Owens earlier, Jeff Owens writes in, and he's wrote in a couple times. Door and call a cab. I'll get to that in a minute. I want to thank Cody for referring me to Voyager Linux. I never really gave XFCE much thought. I really like the interface, and I'm going to move this from a virtual machine to a production machine. I did not think that Thunar would work within a network, but I will let you know. For me, this is the type of desktop interface that I can really easily work with. And then a follow-up update to that, he says, I like it. It may replace my Linux Mint on my laptop. The easy access to programs I use and the information on display both appeal to me. It also was easy, and it was also an easy install. Jeff Owens. I gotta say, Jeff and I were talking on Voxer one day, and I just happened to mention Voyager Linux. For those of you who don't know, Voyager Linux is a French XFCE Ubuntu based distro, and it's super lightweight. Check it out on distrowatch.com. I actually have yet to install it. I just saw a few reviews on it and saw the pictures of this, of the screen caps of the initial desktop environment. I thought that looks cool. It's very, very fast, very clean, which some people don't like, you know, the super flashy bells and whistles, but some people want something functional and lightweight and yet still with a little bit of flash to it. And that's what I think this distro hits. It comes pre-installed with Konki. And not just the full-blown Konki, but I think there's, I want to say, 35 different Konki-type widgets you can enable from the desktop just by right-clicking and checking them off to view all sorts of information. If you guys haven't used Konki before, it's a wonderful thing if you just want to see exactly the kind of nuts and bolts of your system and what's running, what's not, what kind of percentages of your CPU, your RAM, to check storage that's currently being used. So to have, and also to have a lightweight distro have this running off the bat is kind of unheard of. I mean, if you think of things, distros that are running Konki off the bat, I'm thinking of like PinGuy OS, which is based off of Mint, which is a little heavy, especially for older hardware. I mean, if you think of Mint or Ubuntu, technically they don't run great on older hardware. You need to have modern or super bleeding edge hardware to run them really well. And then on top of that, you have Konki running to really let you know exactly how that hardware is performing. But to have something lightweight like this and running XFCE and doing it well, definitely check it out. I have yet to actually install it. I'm going to install it. That's another thing I want to do soon is try to come up with a distro that I'm going to install and run for 2 weeks and give you guys kind of a quick, concise review on what I thought of it And I'm going to do that soon with Voyager, so I'll get back to you on that. Thank you, Jeff, for writing in. Dor, have you run Voyager yourself yet?
No, I tried to install a different distro called Manjaro, M-A-N-J-A-R-O, which was a Arch-based distribution, which I will say, utterly in every single way, absolutely, positively, install even completely failed.
Oh, really?
I tried four different ways to put it on a thumb drive. Every way I tried, it either wouldn't boot or it would boot to a login screen. And then what they said the username password was Manjaro, Manjaro didn't work. Any time. So what I had to do was quite literally go to a different TTY, login as root into the terminal, and then do a start X to get a GUI, and then I could start their graphical, quote-unquote, install application. It would never even partition the drives right, so I couldn't get it installed. I tried to get it installed because it said it was simple and light. I wanted to give it a shot. I will not buy CDs anymore. I ran out like 3 weeks ago. I will never buy them again. So if they don't make it accessible or explicit instructions on how to install to a thumb drive to install, I'm not going to give it a fair shake anymore. You know, I'm not.
Well, that's too bad to hear about Manjaro, because basically the reason this whole thing came up is that I was talking to Jeff about older hardware and how to properly utilize it. And that's something I'm going to bring to a future show. But long story short, I have a couple old laptops that I want to utilize in my home network for different things. And I thought XFCE would be a great DE to run. And let me look for some distros utilizing XFCE well, one of them being Voyager, one of them being Manjaro. And I'm it's a little sad to hear about your experiences with Manjaro. Maybe I'll try it myself, see how it works. Because I have a few different AMD and Intel-based systems just to try it out. I'll definitely do that in the future. XFCE, of course, a great alternative. A lot of guys, Unity came out, some very well-known people, in fact, switched to XFCE. Linus Torvalds, for one, used to, if not currently, loves XFCE and uses it day-to-day. So that's kind of one of the reasons that I wanted to try some XFCE distros out. So, yeah. So thank you, Jeff, for writing in. I will give you a more comprehensive review of Voyager in the future, and perhaps maybe we'll just make a kind of like an XFCE segment, in which case I would have tried a few others as well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I have weird hardware or something. I don't know, but I was going to give Voyager an install, but I had to do a quick task, community task real quick, so I didn't get a chance to install anything else. And I will say, I don't want to install things only in a VM anymore. I don't want to install Linux distros in a VM anymore just for testing purposes, because I feel like it's not a fair test.
Well, no, and you're right. It's not. I mean, it's a nice way to get used to the interface, but it's not a proper environment to give it a comprehensive review, because it's obviously not utilizing all of the proper hardware specs in order to give it a full legitimate try on how it work on your system day to day. For those of you who do know how to set up VMs, if you don't, Google it. It's super easy. I've done it myself, and trust me, out of the guys you would think wouldn't be able to do it early on Linux, I would have been one of them. But I know how to follow directions and read, so I did fine. But yeah, if you don't know, if you've never run KDE before, try different KDE distros in a VM. If you've never tried certain DEs, definitely try them. To get a better bearing, if you like what you see, but it's a little slow, a little sluggish, try it on an actual system, a full install, and give it an actual try. You'll be surprised at the difference. Dor makes a very valid point. And trust me, Dor, out of all the people that I think would be able to install any distro correctly, it would be you. So to hear that, and I'll talk to you more about this soon, but to hear that you had problems with that, I'm wondering what went wrong on either your end or their end to make it not work in your hardware, but we will figure it out.
Yeah. Don't know what it is. I mean, if I had a CD, it might install perfectly fine, but I don't know.
Physical media is for the last generation anyway, right?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm down to about, what, a small pinch of DVDs. And lately, some of the distros I've been installing or downloading, they're like 715 megabytes. You know, so they're not falling on, falling on CDs. I have to put them on DVDs. I'm wasting that extra space, but oh well. I gotta learn how to use thumb drive Linux a little better. Moving on, Tom Blas writes, "Thanks for bringing up the topic of children and computers. My one-year-old son responds to music on his toy cell phone and loves buttons and seeing their response. Cordless phone, air conditioning, remote control, even a light switch is fascinating for him. I set my six-year-old daughter up with an ancient laptop, which is running SLTAS. She uses it to play Nickelodeon games and watch children's cartoons on YouTube. I once let her remove a few screws from a laptop, which was on its way to the trash, so she had a great time. We are now doing activities from the Make Electronics book." And he provides a link, which we'll provide in the show notes. "She especially liked the part where we intentionally overloaded a 3-volt car fuse and made sparks. I highly recommend the book. I hope to work through more of this book and get into the Making Things Talk book." Another link, which we will provide in the show notes. "Keep up the great work, guys. It's been a long time since I missed an episode of Linux for the Rest of Us. Tom Blas, a.k.a. Web Manifesto from Israel." Thank you, Tom. Yeah, man, if you guys have never seen any of those Make books, back when I actually went to a physical brick-and-mortar bookstore, which was Borders before they got shut down, and I saw these books, I love seeing these books with all these little projects that you can do. I mean, I've never been one for electronics, physical hardware hacking myself, just because of lack of knowledge. But to see some books like this laid out for you and be able to really do these fun projects, it's very cool. And to see him doing it with his one-year-old daughter, man, that's just awesome.
Yeah, I never heard of those books before, and now it's the first time I saw it. Really cool. I wish I would have had that when I was a kid.
Definitely. And guys, really quick, I just want to apologize. My dogs are making a little bit of noise outside the room, but I must say it's only because they are hardcore four-pod Linux advocates, and they can't be in here to tell you their exact opinions on Ubuntu 12.10. That's why they're so upset. So, last email of the evening, I believe. Yes, that's correct. Ryan Rittenauer, once again, thank you, Ryan, writes, "Hey, Cody and Dor, I am a longtime listener and credit this show for converting me to Linux, mostly through Dor's insistent nudging and encouragement, which I owe a huge debt of gratitude to. Cody was asking about kids and Linux distros. My 8-year-old daughter has had her own account on every distro I have put on my laptop. There have been many. Just about everything from straight-up Debian to Puppy Linux. She hasn't had any problem running my computer, has even said she likes my computer more than mom's Windows 7 machine." There you go. Here's one for you. "She figured out how to change and install themes on LXDE and GNOME before I did, and she has even made her own wallpapers with GIMP. She only uses Windows when she wants to play Roblox or Wizard 101 with her brother. So if we can get over that hurdle, I think we'll be a one step closer into being a Windows-free household. Keep up the excellent work on the show, Ryan Rittenauer." Once again, it's that gaming angle that people will see as that one big hurdle, and hopefully Steam will help with that. And I've barely conversed with Ryan, but what is his history with the show and with the community door?
Oh, he's basically been around forever, as far as I know. He did a lot of podcasting before he ever met Podnuts. He did what was much closer to actual radio broadcast. He did Ryan's Top Shelf. He did Uncle Bonehead. He did at least one or two other shows. He was with Penguin Pro Producer when it was coming out.
Oh, very cool.
He's an audiophile. He's a guy that loves audio, creation of audio, manipulation of audio. And when he found out you could do it on Linux, he went full bore, like, you know, unbelievably hard towards it. And he's asked, just like anybody else, I guess I can say, he once in a while I'll get an email from him asking a question. I'd shoot him back an answer. Come to find out, he says, "I'm the guy that made him get into Linux and showed him everything. I just answered normal emails from the guy." He seems really nice. He is unbelievably dedicated. He wants to do more at the new radio.net site that me and Tracy help with. And I think he's going to be beneficial to all of us here in the future.
Very cool. Yeah, thank you very much, Ryan, for writing in for the second week in a row. I would have addressed him both last week, but we are a little tied up with time. I'm glad to hear, and I'll probably be reaching out to Ryan because I want to help upgrade my audio setup. Donnie, shut up. Upgrade my audio setup and utilize Linux a lot more than I have been with all my audio work. Well, guys, that was the wrap up. That was the very last email we had for the whole week. Before we sign off here, I do want to remind people once again, if you have not yet, go to podnuts.com/Kickstarter. Steve C is running a Kickstarter involving his future music career, a new avenue for Steve, and the future of the Podnuts Network. What I kind of communicated last week, what I would ask you to do is just ask yourself, what have I gained over the years from Podnuts? Whether it be from Podnuts Daily, Podnuts, Podnuts Pro, Android App Addicts, Linux for the Rest of Us, My Hard Drive Died, Philly Tech Guys, all the shows. And ask yourself what has it contributed to your livelihood, to your professional life, if you've created a business because of it. Ask yourself what you've gained, whether through financial gain, entertainment, or just overall the positive outlook on tech. And do what you can to give back to Steve in this time of need, in this transition, for the overall benefit of everyone involved. Just do what you can. I would appreciate it. I'm doing my part. Dor's doing his part. And once again, to recap, if you guys do a minimum $50 donation toward the Kickstarter, you're going to get the Wise Technician series for free, or the Linux the Rest of Us videos for free, or the Tech Site Builder videos for free. And if you guys don't know, Dor, of course, did the Linux the Rest of Us videos. Steve C did the Tech Site Builder. And our main man, Chris Berry, did the Wise Technician, a sequel coming to that series very soon, which we get a discount if you contribute to the Kickstarter. And overall, I mean, you're talking knowledge and value much beyond the $50 minimum donation required to add in the Kickstarter. So give that a try if you can. We'd really appreciate any help you can get to help Steve meet his goal.
Yep.
And one more quick reminder. My question for next week, which send us emails at podcast@linuxrestofus.com or hit me up on Google+. Your opinion of Steam coming to Linux. I'm just going to leave it broad like that. Hit me up. Dor, any closing questions, concerns, or comments? Where can we find you at?
Now, if you want to know more about me, just go to www.doortodoorgeek.com. Any questions, anything, doortodoorgeek@gmail.com. I do everything I can to try to help everybody as much as possible. And just number one, people, have fun. Number two, provide feedback. Number three, support who supports you.
Definitely. And of course, one more, and actually a quick side question for you. I would say go to codycooper.com, but it's just a landing page with GoDaddy, which I want to change because it's about to expire. If you guys are hosting any sites in any particular with any particular site or organization, and you've had good experience with them aside from GoDaddy, please let me know, because I want to move my domain from them to someone else. So hit me up on Google+ personally. Let me know. I'd appreciate it. As always, please check out the ACF.co. That, of course, that's the Accessible Computing Foundation run by our good friend, Jonathan Nato, bringing accessibility to those who need it. And speaking as an open software accessibility advocate to those who can potentially bring more accessibility to all sorts of open source software. Check them out. You can sign up for regular donations. As little as $2 a month can help in any small way of helping that goal be reached to bring the technology into those people who are potentially being left behind. Finally, I'm Cody Cooper. Thank you on behalf of myself and Doortodoor Geek for listening to Linux the Rest of Us episode 111. And we will listen to you next time. Hit us up with anything else and have a good night.